Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
I'm very privileged today to be joined by Stephen J. Manning, and he is someone you really should know. He's been in business for decades, and he's been through the first AI hype back in the day. And it's a really exciting kind of time right now. The future of AI, AGI, ASI, ethics, love, and singularity is a massive topic. Clearly, we can't cover that all in one short podcast. It's probably four or five podcast episodes to actually discuss this massive topic. I spoke to an AI professor the other day about singularity, and that was quite interesting. And we'll kind of dig into that as well as we go on in this interesting conversation. So, welcome, Stephen. It's lovely to see you again, and looking forward to having a conversation about this.
And good morning and good afternoon, and thank you.
So, I mean, the future of AI, right? It's huge. I did a bit of research, as I know you've done. I've been studying this topic, probably not as long as you, but, you know, maybe 10 years, 11 years or so. So the more up-to-date kind of knowledge about it. But it started out, you know, before Kennedy was even put into power, right? Like, they used AI, didn't they, to analyze all the voters, et cetera, et cetera. And so AI isn't new. Everybody likes to say it's new, but it's segmented into so many different areas. And I think that's quite a sort of interesting place to be at, really, is where we are right now. What do you think, Steve?
It's very interesting that we talk about studying AI. When I first came across AI as a young kid, I didn't think AI was something that we need to study. It was just ordinary evolution of data usage, data analytics, predictive modeling, and all of that, which is AI, as I said previously, and you got a chuckle out of it. I just was not smart enough to call it AI. What a great acronym. Actually, in our business, we call it synthetic data. Data we developed from massive databases, from data analytics, data mining today, to creating predictive models and creating inferences from there, which is what predictive modeling really is. And that is really the bedrock of marketing, if you will, has been certainly since I have been around. As you said, I'm old enough to have been around that for decades. But it's today, of course, it is without a doubt the biggest gorilla in the room. Without a doubt, it is the biggest kahuna ever. And as it relates to all these incredible breakthroughs in science, technology, in history, I mean, perhaps not the wheel, but certainly electricity and the telephone, and then the internet. This AI revolution is just bigger, broader, and frighteningly expedient, lightning fast before our very eyes, makes most of us, including some of us that talk about it, kind of feel like roadkill on the information superhighway. It's a funny thing when we first said that, when the internet first became a thing, and then there was something called the browser, and people said, what exactly is that? And some of us were so cool being able to do searches. And then one of us, I forget who, coined the term roadkill on the information superhighway. It's kind of like everyone else felt. It was sort of like someone who was partially sighted has a significant advantage over someone who is totally unsighted, you know, because truly we're blindly venturing into the future as we are today, as you and I are every day, as you and I in this talk. So, yeah, massive topic. And for all of you watching, listening, Nathaniel and I were pondering, how do you approach this massive topic and its tentacles, the things that appear tangential, but they're not, very integral to it? How do you do that in a half an hour? How about doing it in a one-year university course, which, by the way, you can get at Stanford and and Oxford and Sorbonne, you can get that because it exists. And I find that most people walking out of those courses, walk on, scratching their heads. It's one of those wow things. But so we resolved to talk about all of these, perhaps address them in stages, and then address them again and again and again, individually and developmentally. And of course, whatever it is that Nathaniel and I may speak on for 15, 20, 30 minutes, we can write on, and we write on. And we'll do that in white papers. We'll do that very specific, targeted to individuals who want to know, enterprises who want to know, because any given thing that we may talk about, we can certainly write 1,500 words on in a heartbeat. By heartbeat, I mean, how about tomorrow? Because we just do that anyway. We do it all the time. Anyway, I think I've answered your question at way too much length.
Well, I mean, I think, look, let's just look briefly at artificial general intelligence. I mean, the definition here is basically is a field of theoretical AI research that attempts to create software with human-like intelligence and the ability to self-teach. So, yes, you know, AI is in some cases teaching itself. It is certainly doing that. It's been doing that for a while, but it is segmented. I mean, if you look at the race cars going around a track, that they were doing that about 4 years ago, I seem to remember, and it was just around a specific track, right? And this is the thing, is that the point I'm trying to make is that it's very segmented, which is actually a good thing. Because we don't really want artificial super intelligence. We don't want that, right? Because once a computer can actually perform a task better than a human, then we're kind of in trouble, right? And then it breeds laziness. It breeds the lack of care. And this goes certainly for writing content and creating content. I've seen a lot of very, very sloppy blogs, very sloppy, posts and things like this, which I don't have a problem with people using artificial intelligence when it comes to writing. I don't have a problem with them using it for images. I don't have a problem with it at all, actually. I find it's very, very useful. But I think people need to continue to use their brains, otherwise we're actually going to be going backwards very, very quickly as a human race. And major issue I see is the lack of compensation for artists. There are certain artists that styles are being requested in I forget the program. I was reading something in MIT Technology Review about it, and what they think is that actually the artists, and I probably would think that people writing blogs, people who have written blogs, and that information has been hoovered up by AI, I personally think that those people will eventually be compensated, because they will have to be compensated. It's my personal opinion on it. And they think it's going to become a pay to play kind of a. So if you request an image, it creates an image in, you know, someone's style, someone's artistic style, then that artist will actually get royalties from that one particular image. And they're not all guilty of doing that, because I believe Adobe is one of the companies that actually didn't do that. They actually turned around and said, "Will you work with us? We're gonna reimburse you." Da 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 da. So it's a difficult piece, isn't it?
I think you've just painted a rather large picture. What you just said, we can build a university course around it. Just what you just said. That's how big this is. But if you allow me to just pick a little bit in there, writing, for example, as you do, I communicate with some very interesting people around the world. Some communicate with me for reasons I just don't understand, but they do. And I've given to losing friends, because I will now write, I would like your assertions that at least 75% of what you sent me, you actually authored, rather than it was machine written. a good friend of mine who's a world-renowned academic. Why is she my friend? Because we've been friends for 35 years, 45 years. He asked me if I was just trying to lose friends. The answer is yes. There are a number of people that you know by name, Nathaniel, that will no longer communicate with us because I want your original thought. Now, snippet. I was in a meeting, a physical meeting. Yeah, sometimes we even have those with three people. While we're talking, topic comes up. Somebody should send an email to a certain entity. A person in the room says, I will. He sports an MBA from Wharton. I'll drop a quick email. And I said, what are you doing? I'm sending an email. I should consider it later. No, I can do it now. Oh, okay. ChatGTP, write me an email to Bob Johnson on this. I'm done. The email was written that moment artificially. Who the heck cares? I find that disturbing because we're not dumbing down a populace. We're dumbing down some of our very best, giving them tools that obviate the need for independent thinking. As you know, I'm really big on that. In fact, it's part of the subtitle of my new book coming out in 2 weeks. Thank you all. Without independent thought, there's no progress. Not that said, artificial intelligence, artificial general intelligence. Now, I don't think, and this will be a recurring theme as we talk about all these wonderful things, acronyms notwithstanding, AGI, ASI, ooh, singularity. Oh, I have some thoughts on singularity, which is what's scaring the heck out of everybody. That is why I will not have a job in a year or two, period. I'm out of work. What am I going to do? I'm not a technologist. I can't write code. I can't even interpret that stuff, much less do it. I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to have to work a graveyard shift in a convenience store. By the way, I don't think I'm being particularly cute. I think that is in the minds of many, 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 many people. But I look at things like artificial general intelligence as opposed to artificial intelligence. Now, here's a recurring theme on what I'm going to say often enough. AI, AGI, ASI, ABC, Bob Johnson 32-4, and whatever the heck those things are, they are not smarter than Nathaniel Schooler. What they are is wonderfully Baconian. By that I mean is that pretty much all knowledge that most of us absorb, work with, regurgitate, do something with, is deductive. I don't know that in my lifetime I will ever come up with a cure for an orphan disease or another way to split the atom. I may find ways to make better use of that. In other words, it's what AI does is what you and I do. In my entire lifetime of commerce, of incredible relationships, for which I could not be more grateful, I have come up with two concepts that are being used in marketing worldwide today. Frankly, one of those was kind of by design. Fortunately, I worked for a company that could afford to allow me the folly of spending millions of dollars to chase that rainbow. We got there. Another one, I just came across it when my boss yelled at me that if I wasn't going to fix it, he's going to fire me. Okay, so I fixed something that was not fixable, an oxymoron. But other than that, every project I do, every line of thinking I go through, when I am done, I don't come up with another way to split the atom, but I come up with testable hypotheses, which means if that is true, then what? And which is why I preach, you preach, always ask the next question and the next and the next and the next. If that's true, then what? Oh, by the way, my first exposure to that was my oldest daughter. Bless her, she is bleeding edge brilliant, as is my youngest daughter, which just goes to show that prayer works. If you pray, they turn out like their mothers. Anyway, my incredibly bright, must be her mother, incredibly inquisitive, little bitty girl with the pigtails was given to be really argumentative. She'd ask a question, I would answer it. Then she'd come back 10 minutes later. But Daddy, why? Why? Okay. By the way, this little girl was speaking complete sentences before she was two. She was using big words. Weird. The fifth time she would come back. But Daddy, but why? That's when I would say things like, because I said so, out of pure exasperation. That's when I realized that pretty much all knowledge that I'm going to have or develop will be deductive. Very much Bacon-esque. See, that in my mind is what AI and artificial general intelligence of any kind, the Uber version, that's what that does, except it's not smarter than Nathaniel Schooler. It is not. What it does, it can process those hypotheses at speeds that I can't wrap my arms around. That's what AI does. They said, well, if that's true, what else? And now we search that a massive amount of data that it crunches. Now, you know, it's a funny thing. People think about AI as a thing or a being, or it's a supernatural power. Huh. Let me suggest to you that right now, around the world, certainly the developed world, United States, UK, where you are, there is an increased demand of electrical power caused by the computers that crunch AI data. Okay, so are they thinking? They are crunching information at a level heretofore unprecedented, and it continues to grow and grow and grow and grow. And it just takes a lot of computing power to do that. Of course, this can do 20% of 10% of that. I don't need computing power. I got Amazon Cloud. They do everything for me if I really want it.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is that when you get frightened, all it does, that thing, whatever it is, it just computes faster than you, creates relationships faster than you, draws conclusions faster than you. That's the scary part. You know, the person who's going to put the rivets on that little piece of that automobile or the space shuttle, it takes cognitive involvement to fit the thing and turn the thing. Turn it 2.5 turns. Turn it to 27 pounds. A robot built in, 27 pounds, 2.5 turns at 12.2% angle. Okay, artificial intelligence. Now, can that robot take over the person's job? Just look at a couple of interesting pieces. You'll find them on YouTube on how the guts of a Tesla factory. They say, well, where are the people? Well, you know, every 30 or 40 feet, there is a computer operator. The rest is pure robotics.
But Stephen, this has been going on since the Industrial Revolution, right? It's just a different element to that, yeah. And if you think about it, if you look back even to 2015, I mean, Hitachi had a AI robot that was managing the warehouse, and actually they had productivity increase of I think it was 11% within 24 hours in this particular manufacturing process, right? So it's nothing unusual. The thing that I sort of just worry about is we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, and all of this investment and all of this AI bubble that we're in at the moment, it's not going to really, yes, it's great and everyone's having fun with it and all of this sort of stuff, but it doesn't do exactly what I want it to do, not yet. And without an improvement in the user interface, which would become really a robot, which is the next iteration of it. Once robotics catches up, then we're at a point where actually it's going to become quite exciting. Yeah. And I mean, you know, a lot of people, they've already got these Hoovers, right? Or the lawnmower, right? But that's not AI, right? That's just a computer program that says, this is the area you're in. If this, then that, then, yeah? And it's all of these companies have just said, oh, well, we have AI. It's like, well, actually, you don't really have AI. You have a computer program and you're just using the words AI to pretend that, you know, you have it. And it's just like, well, actually, you know, I spoke to Watson when I went to IBM, the IBM basement tour at Wimbledon. And that is exactly what you say. It's based on a database of tennis players, and it's based upon a database of the history of tennis in the world. And also, so it's, I think, three databases, and it's also got the history of the real time tennis scoring that is taking place. So that's why that it could immediately come up with an image within 2 minutes was the actual time frame that they gave it. So if Pete Sampras hit a serve and it was 140 miles an hour, which is, you know, very, very fast, as you know. I know you're a tennis expert. So if he did that, it would say, this is the second fastest serve in the history of Wimbledon, right? But it also was actually gauging the crowd on social media, and also the volume of the clapping, et cetera, et cetera. So then it could send out the best social media updates for people to watch so that they were really excited about the tennis. And so all of these things, they've been around, and it is quite exciting. I'm very, very excited about it. And I mean, ethics is crucial. The AI Act that's in place in Europe is, you know, encouraging the rest of the world to actually follow suit. That's exciting. But love and love is a different one. That's a very difficult conversation. We can have that conversation. I suggest we do that another time, because I know you've got to scoot off to a meeting in a second.
You're talking about tennis, and then I would love to skip just a little bit to singularity, as I just love the term tennis. You know, the electronic line calling in tennis today. It's available everywhere now, except on clay courts, because people love to look at the marks and you can make the ref come down and look at it. This adds a little drama. Electronic line calling. How is that a ball lands and within a fraction of a second, a voice, male, female, older, younger, loud, not so loud, a variety calls out. Out, fault. How does it happen? Speaking of artificial intelligence, all it is, now I'm going to simplify this because I'm a simple person. There is a bunch of cameras that are strategically placed. They don't record where the ball lands, although they reproduce a video of it. But all these cameras compute the trajectory of the ball and estimate where it landed and activate a voice that says out or out. Fault. Now, how is that possible? Well, when IBM first started to mess with that stuff, it wasn't really that possible. Now, those computations takes place in a bloody nanosecond. You know, that just goes into this thing and it thinks that the thing was 1 millimeter out. Isn't that cool? Now, that's just pure AI technology. Now, I would like to talk for 2 minutes on singularity, because I would like to know who coined that. Who's a smart person who came up with technological singularity? And then we have this great definition. Love definitions. I made note of what you said. is a hypothetical future point in time at which technological growth becomes uncontrollable and irreversible, resulting in unforeseeable consequences for human civilization. So I asked myself, have I seen that on TV or movies? That's when the machines take over. Oh, the jet that's taken over by AI and is going to cause incredible damage somewhere because the machine has run amok. When I see the jet flying and they're trying to catch it because the jet now has a mind of its own, technological singularity, that jet decided that it needs to destroy that habitat. My reaction is, who do we fire? We got to fire somebody. Of course, my reaction to a lot of terrible things is the same. First, who do we fire? See, I believe that when we talk about the machines are going to take over, technological singularity, I think that to some extent is cheap television. Is it a mirage? What the heck is it? Because there is, no matter what you think, how you think, there's always a hierarchy of the technology. They're machines pushing other machines, okay? And that's able to do that as their processing capabilities just grow exponentially. Then, we got to fire someone. Look, we can teach a primate to fly a space shuttle, but we can't make that primate think and problem solve unless we have mapped out the problem to begin with. So no matter what level you are in this AI singularity paradigm, there's a hierarchy of technologists. There are theoreticians, thinkers. There are technologists. Okay, in the vernacular, now, is there not a woman or a man or compendiums of those who eventually push those buttons? They do it for what reason? To turbo boost the gig? To throttle the gig? To guide the gig? To direct it? To misdirect it? Yep, there are a lot of nefarious people in the world. See, I wonder if it's not much about the speed and efficiency of qualifying data and then developing the progression of testable hypotheses. What if? Now, without a doubt, if you take that to the, well, not quite the absurd, eventually you ask a question that spawns something really new. Okay, that develops that new idea, which is would be technological singularity. But there is a compendium, there's people that push that along. And when that happens, they recognize it. The machines are not taking over the world. The machines are taking over a lot of the a lot of the action. Heck, you stand up vacuum cleaner. Oh, that's so yesterday. Okay. Yeah,
completely. There's a
really cool one of the great universities up your way. They are developing seeing eye dogs that are robots. You have a seeing eye dog. You can talk to you. You can plan. You can program. It does everything a 777 airplane does. It will talk to you. It will guide you. Tell you to sit down. It will warn you. It will do everything, including make sure you don't bump into walls or step off a curb, which is a really cool dog won't do. But these guys, yeah. They're one of your great universities in northern UK. There is no reason on earth why everyone who's sight impaired should not have one of those. Great.
Okay? Yeah, I agree.
AI at its best. I mean, that AI at its best, but that has a finite reason to exist. I'm here to tell you that there are a lot of jobs that will be obviated by AI, no doubt. The big question, the big kahuna in the room, the big elephant in the room, what are you going to do if you have one of those jobs that the machine can just do better and faster? Can we all learn how to run those machines? Can we all learn how to program those machines? Or is it possible to control the genie? Can't put it back in the bottle, but you might be able to control it for better use for the general population. Because if you look at it just at a low level, oh my God, millions of people lose their jobs, period. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to get engineers and doctors. I have a very good friend who's a doctor. I have some less than complimentary things to say about most physicians, particularly certain disciplines. And this man, who is a brilliant physician, he's also a police officer. Go figure. You fix him and then you chase him. I don't get it. He's telling me that there are certain disciplines of medicine that are going away because AI can much, for example, AI processes are much more accurate, less error prone reading radiology exams, for example. So yeah, what are the radiologists going to do? I guess they're all going to become obstetricians. I don't know. But the reality is that having had an experience recently myself with a negligent radiologist, I just as soon have a machine that Nat Schooler worked on read my exam. That's a reality.
Well, Stephen, you may kill me if you don't go now. So I'm going to wrap things up.
I will never kill you because I love you and I benefit greatly from my relationship with you.
You know, yeah, but you said you had to go, so I don't want to kind of keep you if you need to scoot off now.
No, I understand. We're good for a little bit more.
Oh, okay, cool. So yeah, I mean, what you've just said is very interesting because I mean, I asked my professor who is an AI professor. He's built a company, sold his company, works for one of the top five universities in the world. I'm not going to say where it is. But it's very important. He's a very important dude. His work has been cited hundreds and hundreds of times. And what is interesting is I said, look, what's your view on singularity? And he says, I said, do you think we're close to that time wise? I'm just reading this from my chat. And he basically said, it depends what it means. I don't think there's a simple answer to that, which made me laugh. It did make me laugh. I was expecting that. I was expecting that answer completely because I don't believe singularity is segmented into tasks, right? Like it's segmented into different types of AI and what it can do. And I said, do you think computers will take over with singularity? And he says, probably not. So I thought that was particularly interesting. I think that we're at a point in time where it's just about to get even more interesting. And I mentioned this in the blog that we wrote together about Google and actually how it's rebranding its assistants as more advanced agents, which it says could show reasoning, planning, and memory skills and are able to take multiple steps to execute tasks. Because look, I tried to create a podcast image because I'm rebranding one of the other podcasts that you've been on as well, the Build Business Acumen one. And I was like, okay, I want to stick my picture on there. I want to change the color and I want to put my name at the bottom. And so I put all of this into, I was thinking, oh, Bing, you know, the Microsoft Edge. Oh, great. It's going to do it. Right. And I was like, okay. I got all excited and you go to the image creator and it says, what do you want? I said, well, I want you to take this picture and I want you to put a headline. I want you to do that. And it didn't do anything. It did absolutely nothing. I had to do it myself. And I was like, okay, so there is clearly some sort of overhype kind of going on here, right? Like it's clearly overhype. I do think some people are actually benefiting quite well from using the AI writing tools and creating some really cool images. I mean, I used an AI image creator a few weeks ago for a blog that I created for Intel, and it created like 9 images for this blog, and I was really happy because it was the consistent style that is what is important, and that's the most difficult thing. I know you know, people watching this, you don't know like what I do, what we do in marketing. But a lot of the time we create images or we pick images which we think are going to be useful to catch your attention. So you're going to read what on earth it is that we're writing to you, right? And I spend ages sometimes choosing an image, and it really frustrates me that I can't just push one button and create a series of four or five images that will reflect the interesting points I'm trying to make, and they will keep your attention so you read through the blog and you're not bored, because boring blogs kill people. I mean, literally, they kill people. And so I think, yes, there are some tools out there, but they're cutting edge. They're not being used by most people. This one tool, very exciting, because it's gonna be moving into the sort of short video kind of clips as well. So that's exciting. I'm very excited about really the entire piece, but I'm also very worried about the love element, purely because, I mean, if once they progress these sex dolls and this kind of stuff, And they input a chatbot into that. You know, a lot of these guys that are playing video games in their early 20s are not going to want a woman, right? Like they're not going to want one. Yeah, and it's and may happen with women too, right? Like, and it's I'm very worried because it is frightening, because also reproduction is dropping in the West. Africa is going like this in population growth. India also is growing population growth. The West is actually going down because of the unhealthy people who basically just they're not healthy. And it's a very worrying time right now. But I do think, saying all of that, I still come from a half glass full kind of attitude. I really believe that there are so many problems that can be solved using AI, using data, analyzing that data. I mean, look, the weather, right? The weather forecasting is so amazing right now. It's actually blowing my mind. It's blowing my mind because it's the access to data that the weather forecasting apps have is just it blows my mind. It really does. So I'm quite excited, if I'm honest.
Will you allow me 3 minutes to share a hope I have with a tiny anecdote? I hope that the antidote to a lot of this is some of us who are quintessentially not talking heads. The distinction being, we actually deliver value, not just get money from you. Of course, we love getting money from you as well, but that would not be the point. So I thought about this morning in terms of, are there enough of us that are contrarians that think in a just different paradigm, perhaps? Some of it historical, some of it forward-looking, whatever. Are there enough of us that will hold on to certain thought processes, whatever those are, to create the balance to the galloping technology? The reality is that technology inventions always gallop ahead of the structures needed to control them, use them, ethical, social, financial, legal. So much of this invention is just way ahead of all of that. It's all catch up. So you will allow me this. I have a new book coming out in 2 weeks. I don't know if you can see it, but okay.
I'm excited. I've decided. Read it and it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
So, well, it's brilliant, yeah, because you like me.
No, it's not. It's a great book. And
thank you.
I think if you're listening to this, you should check it out and buy Stephen's other book as well.
But I decided to narrate the thing myself. Now, I'm certainly not a voiceover guy. I'm not a native English speaker. I'm given to some inflections that may be wrong. Sometimes the accent is not quite on the right syllable. So I'm not exactly the ideal person to narrate a book. Publisher says you should narrate your own book, particularly that it's your life stories and so on. I said, okay. I spent too many hours in a studio last week. I actually, believe it or not, Nathaniel, actually had the script in front of me. Very professional. Without a doubt, I garbled words. I put accents in the wrong place. I meant to say he, and I said we. And that goes on for hours and hours. Now, the engineer, every time he hears a boo-boo, he flags it. And then an hour into it, we take a break. Then he goes back and fixes it. It's phenomenal. Did you mean to say we or he? Oh, I need an H. Then he goes, finds an H, takes that little bit of sound, puts it in there. It's now he instead of we. You garbled that word. What did you meant to say? I meant to say this. Okay, so he spends 5 minutes and finds a word similar to that in my speech pattern and puts it in there. It gets fixed. It's still not perfect, without a doubt. 2 hours into it, he says to me, you know, Steve, why don't we just build an AI model of your voice, feed the script in it, and we'll sit back. And instead of recording for hours and hours and hours, fixing hours and hours and hours, it will be perfect. No garbling of words. Your voice. How long will that take? Have a soda. We'll build an AI model of your voice, and your script will be perfect. And I won't have to edit it. I'll just... And that's when I threw a minor fit. I said, is that dishonest? It is. And I thought about you, actually, among others. I do have some readers, thank you, who know me. And some of them know my voice, and they appreciate what I write better because they can hear it. I can hear my friend Nathaniel Schuller listening to this saying, calling me on the phone or send me a note in the middle of the night and say, did you cop out? That's not you. Just thought I'd share that. So maybe there's rebels or maybe there's contrarians that will hang on to those things that are, in fact, unique. Yeah. They're different. Maybe they are creative, if you will. Rather than the experience, I could have recorded it in no time at all. It would have taken this man an hour to come up with an AI model, then feed the thing, and I could have gone and had some lunch and be done. I said, no, it'll come through with the words and all of that, and it won't be able to be perfect, but I won't get a call from Schuller saying, you copped out, AI. I thought I'd share that with you, Nathaniel.
Yeah. Well, I do, you know, I've thought a lot about that, and I think there might even be a bit like a fair trade mark that there is for food. I think there may be a fair work mark coming out at some point. If someone's listening to this, they might come up with one. But, you know, the past few months, we've talked a lot about technology, AI, the AI Act, interviewed someone from Intel talking about the AI chips that fight cybersecurity attacks on the machine. That's very interesting. So I interviewed Sarah Storelli last podcast, which was interesting, around AI as well. So you guys should go and check those out. And also Stephen and I are going to be talking about this in our next episode. And if you struggle with creating the right content and you would like some help to create something, we provide our clients content production for forward-thinking brands and ambitious individuals. Podcasts, white papers, deep dive industry reports, explainer videos. And whether it's a white paper, a deep dive industry report, or an explainer video or podcast, Stephen Manning and I will give you custom-generated hardcore information and guidance specifically aimed at the audience that you really want to hit. So if you would like to contact me on LinkedIn or on info@influentialvisions.com. We would be very grateful. We'd love to help you with whatever requirements you have. So I want to just say thank you, Stephen. And yeah, and do look out for Stephen's books. It's going to be quite exciting, this new one coming out. I'm sure it's going to be doing very well. So thank you very much for listening. And thanks for joining me, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.